The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
The first thing we're going to kick things off with is how to foster a sense of independence and even maybe adventure in your kids. For example, would you let a four-year-old go for a walk alone? Dr. Claire Moriarty is with me, who's a postdoctoral researcher working at Trinity Research in Social Sciences in Trinity College Dublin. Claire, you're very welcome to the show. You have a four-year-old.
I do. Yeah.
You let her wander freely around the city, I understand.
Yeah, as I said to Jen, I just get her in the car and dump her out somewhere in the middle of town.
She doesn't know. You blindfold her first and then you do it.
Yeah,
exactly. That's great resilience you're teaching her.
Absolutely. She'll be able for anything.
So tell us, what rules or regulations, or how do you manage this then? Kind of that sense of independence you want to instill in her.
Okay, so the context is she is a big fan of the show Octonauts, maybe familiar to you if you have children of this age. So she's...
I was going to say Up the Hard Shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Wow. We don't really rate amongst four-year-olds generally. Go on.
So she's gotten into this kind of Attenborough Cousteau-type mode of inventing new animals and telling us all about leaves she finds in the gardens from this kind of fake anthropologist perspective. So we love nature. We're really trying to engender more of this in her as much as we can. So she has a small little red rubber amputee dinosaur called Shiny, who is the closest thing on Earth to her at the moment. And Shiny is, she tells us, a nectar raptor, which means he feeds on flowers. So, you know, they were once content to hunt for Shiny's sustenance in our garden. But the other day she asked me, can I take a walk, you know, just me and Shiny on our own and get some food? So I sort of said yes, with the caveat that, you know, we live in an estate. It's a busy enough estate for cars, but she's unbelievably road safe. You know, we take her on the bike over and back to creche every day. She probably spends an hour a day on the pavements. But the kind of caveat was she can't go beyond the terrace of houses we live on. She can't go into the road. I mean, she knows not to do that anyway. She can't go up the lane behind the house. She has to stay kind of on that block where she would be in principle visible from the end of the garden. And then I kind of hover around the door and try as much as I can to not run down every few seconds to be like, are you there? You okay?
Okay.
So I listen to her then having these nature chats. You know, the payoff is obvious. You can see her kind of excitedly bouncing around the road with Shiny, talking, this is the new nutritional flower. It's going to be really good. It's going to make you big and strong. And I feel like it is giving her a kind of slightly exhilarating sense of nature and the world out there and getting in it.
And are you hovering at the end of the garden looking at her? Or have you managed to kind of close the door and let her be out there on her own?
I tend to sit on the step knitting, so I can't see her a lot of the time. I could hear her if she shouted, and I try and avoid going down to look at her all the time. I try and actually allow her a little bit of in-principle independence there.
And does she have a good sense of how long she's been gone for? Does she tend to kind of go a certain amount and come back? Or if you were not to call her, would she just stay out there?
I don't think she'd stay out there. And it is like she's never done it for more than sort of 10 minutes. And she often like brings back flowers, you know, so she's, you know, she's kind of coming back to engage and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's not a huge amount of
okay,
time.
OK, so you didn't, like you said initially, you said yes, kind of fairly straight away. You didn't have to think too deeply about this. You were confident enough that she would be safe out there. Because there'll be a lot of people listening to this and they'll be terrified at the thought of letting the four-year-old out the front door on their own.
Yeah. Well, as I say in the piece, like, her brother shows no signs of being afforded the same privileges. Like, he's been trying to jump into UCD Lake since he was born, basically. She's never been like this. It's not something she doesn't run beyond where she is. I mean, I probably should have asked my husband before I did it, but it didn't even occur to me to. I felt so sort of secure in the idea that she'd be safe in this restricted sense.
Jen Hogan, sorry, I didn't even introduce you. Jen Hogan is with me as well, the journalist with the Irish Times. I was about to bring you straight in. First name basis, that's what we're on.
That's grand. But,
did you afford any of your kids the same luxury when they were four?
Well, I mean, my own husband has found out about things that my kids and me have been up to by reading it in the Irish Times as well. So we have that in common, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, look, I definitely, a bit like what Claire's saying there, definitely would see huge differences. And I don't know if gender comes into play here or if it's just that in the same situation as yourself. My eldest child is a girl and she was exceptionally clued in to things and very aware, very mature, very capable. But Claire, four, I think at four, I would have had a heart attack about the idea of her being away from my line of view. Not because I didn't trust her And not because I think there's these big bad men waiting around every corner looking to jump on our kids, because I do think we have catastrophized things a lot in the kind of conversation around parenting. I think we frighten parents a lot. We're in danger of making our kids quite anxious about there being more dangers than there are. But because a lot of my kids love nature too, and they could see a puppy or they could see something across the road, or they could see a pal and there could be excitement and maybe make a dash across the road. Or, you know, electric cars terrify me as a grown up when you don't hear them coming along. It's those sort of things, I suppose, I'd be more concerned about something like that, and less about the idea that somebody is going to come along and grab a 4-year-old. I mean, I know there's always those dangers, but they're minuscule, minimal.
And so you obviously, as you say, Claire, spend a lot of time on the road with your daughter, cycling over and back to creche. She's on the pavements and the footpaths quite a bit. But would you have any of that sense of risk? You know what I mean? That, you know, you say she loves nature, that maybe she might have seen something across the road, like, or she was following a butterfly with her amputee dinosaur.
Because I spend so much time on the road with her, I really am used to how she uses the road, and never in the, God, it must be hundreds of hours at this point that we've spent, has she ever just sort of automatically followed some instinct? I mean, she's justifiably scared of cars. Like, she doesn't have any interest in going out there. And of course, you know, a car could crash onto the pavement or some, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about being careful of lanes, a lot of lanes where I live, and how they are basically like mini roads or whatever. But I think some of the kind of infinitesimally likely risks we're thinking about here, I don't want to be parenting on the basis of stuff I think is almost completely implausible. Do you know what I mean? So I think I'm trying to balance these small risks with her against what I see as a reasonably potent risk now of keeping her inside all the time, having her become a screen addict. I feel like that calculation probably needs to be recalculated now a bit, like trying to make the world genuinely exciting and interesting for them. So like, as I was saying in the piece as well, I sometimes let her go in the cycle lane for brief stints, you know, even though it's the stabilizer's bike, even though somebody could get annoyed if they come zooming up behind her and shout at her. But I want her to be able to use the world. I want her to be comfortable in public space, be getting an increasing sense of safe behaviors, when to be nervous. And I think that's...
Do you think we, as Jen kind of touched on there, catastrophize the world around us?
Yeah, like, I think we're really bad at calculating risk. I think often we can think about this debate in terms of being overprotective, but I think sometimes the version of overprotective is not even protective at all. So I think, like, part of her being safe in her community, let's say, and in a few years when she's old enough to be going to school or maybe doing bits of that route on her own, not at 4, I think her safety in that setting will be a function of her experience in her community. So does she know her neighbours? Are there people's houses she can go into where she knows there are kids who live if she's getting a bad feeling about somebody who's near her? So I think, you know, becoming competent in public space involves us as parents and as families to reclaim it a little bit for ourselves. So to try and make it safer for them, but also to use it. So we talk about people being afraid to even bring their kids into town now, and it's because we're not out, you know. It's probably unjustified.
And you definitely see less children out playing at the moment out the front, like if you're looking out the front. And some of that, I suppose, is also because of the way we work as well, you know, where you've got people, parents maybe aren't at home and children are either in childcare facilities or somebody else is responsible for them and they don't want to take on that additional thing of letting them out. And I completely agree with you there. It would be great to get our kids away from the screens and out playing and exploring. And I think we are guilty of overparenting sometimes and controlling what, like, we schedule fun for our kids now instead of, like, the free play is gone. Like, we schedule fun. Like, even the way we've adopted the little kind of American term of play date, and it's all so trying just go and play with your mates. You know, that's what we did growing up. That's kind of all changed.
How did you manage the kids, say, all right, obviously not at 4, but a little bit older, when you let them out on the road, out into the world on their own, you couldn't see them. Was there a way you managed it? Did you give them like a watch and tell them they had to be back at a certain time? Or
it's funny because my eldest child, and I mean, I'm an eldest child myself, so I should know better, but I remember how suffocating it is being an eldest child when you're not allowed to do things. And she certainly had way less permissions when she was younger than some of her siblings at certain stages. But then because she's a girl.
We all turn into progressively worse parents.
We all do. We do. You know, you're like the last one juggling knives. Exactly. So, I mean, I let my standards slip.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what happens as you kind of go through parenting. I think it was a case of, it was progressively allowing them have a little bit more freedom. Again, even enrolling big siblings sometimes it was kind of handy, you know, they could go out and play, and maybe they might have another sibling playing with their friends somewhere close by, and, you know, you say throw an eye to whatever. But I've always been nervous about them being out of sight. And again, it's not necessarily about fear of what they do. And there are children, I fear what they would do in terms of common sense. There is one I know, he'd be gone immediately at any sight of a dog. I know he's gone no matter what's going on. Like, I mean, if anybody wanted to take him, the abduction thing would be, do you want to come see my puppy? And that's his love of creatures is such that would terrify me. But it's not even about that. It's about something happening and me not being there, or them perhaps being distracted by something else. I remember when we were out even walking during COVID, and we'd go out, and do you remember there was the really strict rules, you weren't to interact with different things. And I remember one of my children darting across the road because they saw a little pal, and they were just so excited to see somebody. And that's the sort of thing that I would be somewhat nervous about when they're younger. So I suppose it's, again, letting them get older, that bit of life experience when they've done things with me, even things like walking to school. I live within walking distance of our school. And when older children were taking on responsibility for younger siblings, I definitely, and I wouldn't hand out phones in primary school or anything like that, but there was a comfort if they had a phone, you know, maybe when they got to sixth class and they had a phone, and I'd go, okay, somebody can ring me if there was a problem. You know, they weren't using it for anything else at that stage. I'm not advocating phones in primary school. There's no phones in primary school. It's the very end of primary school. Maybe they might have got one, and it was for that reason only. And there were things like that, I suppose, that I liked to feel connected. That isn't something our parents had, and we were absolutely grand, but we did do lots of things back in the 80s and 90s that weren't okay, like chuck 10 people into the back of a Ford Fiesta with no seat belts or car seats, and not worry about things like that.
My kids were at a match the other night. I'm not going to name them now on national radio, but I rang my wife to find out, and my young fella got on, and she said, "Oh no, Grace has gone off to watch the Camogie match elsewhere," and she said, "Yeah, she's gone off, 9 of them in the car."
I mean,
one of the neighbours rounded up 9 of the kids, chucked them into the car, and headed off to watch the Camogie match.
We wouldn't even bat, like, back years ago, you wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. Now you've just outed them.
Fair play. I'm going off to cheer on the Camogie team.
I wonder if there's a way that they could become so densely packed in together that it's actually safer, you know, because it's actually.
Exactly.
You know,
they're wedged. They couldn't move.
But there is something, isn't there, even as well, about, like, if you look at the experience that you have too, you know, if one or two or three or four of them have been okay, then you kind of figure it'll be grand, you know, it'll be fine. This has worked. I mean, you take into account personalities and calculated risk, like Claire is saying there. But you do have to bear in mind that the one thing you can't give kids is time. And when they're young, they've only had a certain amount of time on this planet. And even the most capable, the most wonderful, independent child, I would always be scared of the impact of the distraction of others. That's the thing.
Actually, somebody makes that point. What about the idiots who drive while texting? They might not see a four-year-old. Whatever about four-year-olds, I know so many who won't leave their 12 or 13-year-olds at home on their own. I babysat babies when I was 12. They all have phones and immediate connection now. I have left my children at home since they were 11. The eldest is now 22 and still alive the last time I checked. That listener says. Somebody else says, I love the concept of age-appropriate risk. It means giving the child the space to take small risks, which builds their independence and confidence. Parents today helicopter too much, and kids are just not prepared then for the real world, which Claire speaks to the point you made. But I like this one. My four-year-old can't wipe their bum properly yet. Enough said. Anyway, on that note, Jen Hogan, journalist with the Irish Times, and Dr. Claire Moriarty, postdoctoral researcher working in Trinity. Thank you both very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.